it's obvious that when these two team up, the result is magical.
This Week in Tennis.
And we brought this dynamic duo together once again.
Welcome to This Week in Tennis.
Well, Craig, the carnage continues at the U.S. Open.
And we've only had 2 days. One round.
Welcome to This Week in Tennis. I'm Phil Nasons. He's Craig Doyle, and we've been around together here on this podcast for 11 seasons. This is season 15, wrapping up, really. We only got a couple more weeks, and the real tennis season is over. Let me say something, Craig. Am I the only one that wasn't shocked that Alaz Cornet defeated Emma Raducanu?
I want to say no, but the way that the commentary team was going on last night, it sounded like it was one of the biggest shocks of all time.
No. You know what? Boy, we're going to talk about a lot of heavy stuff today, and we're going to give you a couple picks, probably, if we have time. But that's not a shock. You know, when I saw her calling for the trainer, you know, it was really weird because my pizza had just gotten here, right? And I was hopping up there to get it and all this and that. And I heard on the TV, Emma's talking to the chair after the first set. And the first thing I thought was, here come the trainers and here come the excuses. And, you know, I have to wonder, Craig, I'm going to ask you something. Do you remember Emma ever complaining about blisters in her 2021 run?
At the Open? No. After the Open? Sure.
Okay. Do you remember when she was playing in Canada against Serena Williams and Victoria Azarenka and she won successive matches over the two mommies? Did she complain about blisters then?
No. I mean, she's not complaining about any of these injuries. And then when she does get injured and she's got to come off, and it seems like she's going to be out for 2 months, she's back playing the next week.
Or the next day. That's just it's a strange thing. But as I was watching the tennis match last night, Craig, I started to think, you know, we've been critical about the endorsements and the amount of endorsements. We're not the only ones. There are many others. And now I finally realized that her parents were right. You better go grab all that cash while you can because, you know, it ain't going to happen again.
I agree. I mean, she's not playing like Emma Raducanu who played last year. She's playing a lot more like Caroline Wozniacki played. She's standing so far back in the court. She hits these high forehands over the net that have got no venom on them. Completely opposite to what she was doing last year, where she stood on the baseline and she hit really flat, causing everyone lots of problems. It's almost like she just doesn't want to lose anymore.
Well, that's what it is. One of the commentators, you know, it was really funny. I'm not going to name her name. She's a legend in American tennis, though. They were talking about the coaching, and she said, you know, she could probably get away with that. She's had plenty of coaches, and that's probably part of the problem. You know, I think that what happened, and this is a girl, you know, let's not forget something, that this is a girl who pretty much mowed through the ITF circuit. I don't think she dropped a match in a very long time at the lower levels of pro tennis. You know, she showed enough promise for the LTA to give her a wild card to the 2021 Wimbledon event. She did okay there. Then she complained of anxiety, and probably she was having some. But then she won the U.S. Open, and then all hell broke loose for her. Her life changed. But I think that her parents did the right thing. You know, bottom line is, that's a circus over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. And I heard some people last night offering the idea that now that she's not got any pressure on her and she's going to be ranked about 90 or 100 in the world, that things can get a lot easier from now on. But I don't think so. You know, every girl who's down at 100 in the world wants to be in the top 50. They want to be getting to the big tournaments, stand the big ticket. I don't know if she's got that desire about her to fight her way back up, or if she's just going to in my personal opinion, is within 6 months, we will not be hearing about Emma Raducanu. The last time you'll see her will probably be at Wimbledon next year. She might even need a wild card from the LTA to get into that event, because I think her ranking might be so low by that point that she doesn't qualify for that event, and at which point we're probably not going to see much more of Emma Raducanu.
And you know what? Who can blame her? She's wealthier than most people will ever dream about being. Most probably 95% of all the tennis playing world, maybe even 98%. But she cashed in. The problem is, I suppose what I would do if I were advising her, because she's had some really bad advice, obviously, really bad advice, I would tell her to get back in the car with her mother and go play the ITF circuit again. Forget about the coaches, forget about all that, and just go out and try to figure it out. I don't think she's going to do that, even if she wanted to. I don't think she can. You know, those sponsors laid out a lot of cash for her, and while they probably have already gotten their money back, now they want to make money, real money. And they're not going to be happy with this girl playing in a 25K or a 50K or a 75K, because they pay her to be on TV to show all those different endorsement logos and whatever else. And it's probably going to mean she's going to be asking for wild cards. I've got it figured out to where she'll probably be around 80 in the world. She doesn't have a lot of points to defend because she hasn't done very well since her U.S. Open victory. I think she's got another year where she can probably sneak in based on just the 2021 success. She probably will avoid qualifying for most tour events. And we'll have to wait and see. The jury is out.
You know,
go ahead.
I'm going to cut in here. I'm going to tell you who this is, because I love this person on this show. But this is exactly the same as Eugenie Bouchard, right? She didn't win a slam, but she did pretty well at two or three slam events. And then all the endorsements started coming in. You know, Eugenie, she's a pretty girl. She's a sponsor's dream. You know, you could put her face on the side of your advertising campaign. People knew who she was. She was going to be the next big thing. It was a matter of time until, you know, she got the big one. And then as soon as all those endorsements came in, she was off doing all the modeling shoots. She was putting her face on whatever brand. And then the results stopped. She dropped out of the top 100. She started getting the wild cards, like you said, Raducanu coming up, she's going to get some wild cards offered to her. But that didn't really help Bouchard, did it? I mean, she dropped as far as 300 or so in the world. She's trying to build herself back up now, but she's, again, you know, she didn't qualify for the Open this year. She's on Tennis Channel, I think. That's probably the route you're going to see Raducanu go. The fact that she's won a slam gives her some perceived value to the media. You'll see her on the TV at Wimbledon. I can assure you that much. They'll want to bring her in there. But you're probably not going to see a lot of her on the tennis court, because once you go down that route and your life becomes so different, it's difficult to go back to doing the things you were doing so well in the first place to get to where you were. And it becomes even harder when people know what it is that you did to get there, because they know how to stop you now. I think this is the start of a year-long slide, as you put it, for Raducanu, and she's got to look at likes of what's happened to players like Bouchard and realize that she's probably not going to be making a career out of tennis.
Well, she did, actually, and she'll do what...
Well, she has, yes.
Yeah, she'll do what Sue Barker did. Remember I pointed out a few weeks ago, she's Sue Barker 2.0? She's waiting in the wings. And that's probably where she'll go. I don't know how much she can analyze. She's not very good at analyzing the situation when she's playing. It's not any easier to analyze something in a chair. But you know what? I wish her all the best. I don't wish any bad luck on that kid. But at the end of the day, she had too much too soon. But her parents did the right thing by hooking up with all that money, because she now has generational wealth. You know, she's got a good attitude, only her attitude in the dressing room is starting to rub players the wrong way. You know, she walks around like she's the queen of tennis now, when the reality is, and everyone knows it, and you could see it on her face, that she knew it too, that she got lucky at U.S. Open in 2021. And now she's going to have, we're going to find out who she really is. And I hope it's a tennis player, because she does have the ability to do fantastic things in the sport. She's got a big serve. She's aggressive as hell on her return, but she just runs in circles on the court, you know. So we'll have to wait and see. Benoit Paire. I just wish that the ATP Tour and the ITF would ban him for life. That performance he put on against Cam Norrie was embarrassing. He should be embarrassed, but he's not. He shouldn't be awarded any prize money for that. It was obvious that he wasn't trying, and he's a disgrace to the sport.
Oh, I mean, it's hard to argue with that.
I didn't think that you would.
I think anybody who was watching would have suggested there was an element of lack of trying. It's almost as if Mr. Paré knew that he would be receiving a large sum of money for competing in this event. Whether, you know, I don't know what his problem is, whether it's bad attitude or if he's got a genuine actual injury or, you know, physical ailment that prevents him from being able to compete at a high level. He knew that he had a ticket to pick up a large sum of money just by turning up this week, and he took up his option on that. I'm not sure what his attitude problem is. That's been something that's been there for several years. He's been someone that's very outspoken about how difficult life is on the tour and how he gets treated second class and whatever, but in terms of sport integrity, that was not good.
Nope, wasn't good. You know, he's also on record as saying that he doesn't care if he wins or loses. So we have that too. Please ban him. Get him off. I know he helps the degenerates make money. But I don't give a crap about your wallet. I care about my sport. And my sport got a black eye yesterday because of Benoit Paire. And he's a disgusting human being. He's a dishonest human being because he cheats. Who knows? He could even be fixing matches. You just never know. But the end of the day is, I have no use for him. I would say these things to his face. I'm not afraid of him. Even on one leg, I would take him. Because you know why? Because he's a gutless coward. He has no integrity, no heart, no courage, no nothing. He belongs in the reboot of The Wizard of Oz because he has no brain. He has no heart, and he has no courage. And you can quote me on all those things, Benoit. And when we see each other again, probably in the next year, I'll reiterate those same feelings to your face, sir. Anyway, Craig, enough with talking about this garbage. I hope I never have to talk about that trash on this podcast again. And he is trash. If you lose on purpose, you're trash. I don't care what the situation is. That's just, there's no integrity at all in this man. But the seeds, Craig, on the men's side. Stefanos Tsitsipas, adios. Taylor Fritz, adios. The Fritz family is 0-2 against the Holt family, by the way. Bautista Agut, adios. Cerundolo, what a bad draw. But bye-bye. And Cressy, Max Cressy. If I hear one more person tell me he's going to win a major, I don't know. He won't, but it is what it is. But the women's side, Craig, that's even worse. Simona Halep, adios. Daria Kasatkina, adios. Emma Raducanu, as we mentioned before, bye-bye. Ostapenko, adios. Anisimova, adios. Rybakina, adios. And she's got major gripes. And rightly so, by the way. Trevisan, adios, Craig. And Mertens, bye-bye. Any surprises out of any of those?
Not a huge amount. The men's side, most of them, I think we had a discussion, and I said, well, most of these guys look like clay courters that have disappeared, so... You know, there's always a liability that if a clay courter draws a semi-decent hard court player that things are going to go bad. Halep, she's gone to bad coaching appointment. previous coaches, she would not have lost in the first round. There's a few, like I think like Anna Samova, I thought would have done better. She's been playing really well this year. Got to the quarterfinals at Wimbledon. A little bit disappointed that she didn't get through, but I don't think there are a huge number of surprises in there. The women in particular, when you look week to week at some of the results, there's not a lot of consistency from even the top 20 players. So anyone disappearing at this stage, it's not a huge surprise to me at all.
Nope. I pointed out in my preview at Covers that Simona Halep has issues with hot, humid days. She, it's that's a real thing, by the way. I'll tell you a funny story. I had these kids from Sweden training with me in Corfu. And as you can imagine, July in Corfu can be very stifling. This young fella who ended up playing at Presbyterian College did very well. He's doing very well in life. And his little brother, who you may see on the tour very soon. But anyhow, the older brother, he comes down at 8 o'clock in the morning to hit for 2 hours with me. And about 25 minutes in, you could see something happening to him. And it was the heat. It was probably already about 90 degrees at that time. Probably 95. Well, you know Corfu. 95% humidity, not a cloud in the sky. But the kid toughed it out, right? And so I go have breakfast with him and his parents, you know, let his parents know what we worked on and this and that. And he's a very respectful kid. He says to me, "Do you think we could practice earlier?" I said, "How early?" He says, "If you'll get up early, I will." So we set up for the next day for 6 a.m., right? And he was waiting for me at 5:30. And I said to myself, man, I have to be better at this. I have to determine this quicker because, you know, you can get in a lot of trouble. But that's a real thing. You know, apparently the new coaching situation with her new pal, Patrick Mouratoglou, didn't work out, which further proves that you go to Paris. Bad things, you don't necessarily, being coached by Patrick Mouratoglou doesn't necessarily guarantee success. In fact, the only one he's ever had any success with is Miss Serena Williams, who we will talk about right now, Craig. I have a post up at Covers. Go to covers.com. I break this match down for you. She's taking on Annette Contave. And, you know, I bet against Serena on Monday. But I'm so happy she won, Craig.
Oh, I know you are.
Those kids, man.
You and I think everybody else didn't want to see Serena Williams come here and lose in the first round. I mean, that's not the way you want to see somebody go out, regardless of how old they are or how poorly they're playing or how little they've been playing. When it comes to their retirement situation, you don't want to see them getting embarrassed in front of their home crowd by someone that relatively few people will have heard of. So I think there was a huge sense of relief that she won that first match. And now, I mean, this is a huge step up for her coming, right? I mean, Contave has been a bit hit and miss. She struggled a little bit after COVID, but she's the number two player in the draw. This is a big, big task for Serena Williams, and I think she's going to have to draw on pretty much everyone in the crowd to get through this one.
Well, that's what I said in my preview, but you have to go read it. And if you do, you'll probably learn a few things. And I'll give you one thing. Contave is not playing like a number two. Since her COVID issue, she's 11-10 overall, and I believe she's 4-3 on the hard courts. Serena hasn't played in a long time, but you know what? What she saw on Monday night was the deer in the headlights look. You know, Kovinich wasn't afraid of the situation. But you know what? When 24,000 plus are cheering every move Serena, your opponent, makes, and jeering and cheering every time you miss, and you saw Kovinich get frustrated because they were cheering for her double faults. And that's the elephant in the room right there, is that crowd. That's the wild card, I should say. She's going to kick some ass today. I think Annette Contave is in big trouble. I don't think she's playing with confidence. And if you have a situation where you're not playing very confidently, and then something goes awry and those fans start going, that's going to pump Serena up. Serena's won 23 majors. She didn't get those points and those trophies at your corner market. You know, she earned every one of them, as did Kontaveit. You know, prior to February, she was one of the hottest players on tour. I think she's like 47 and 15 on hard courts. But at the end of the day, she hasn't played well since February. And I would think that Serena has a puncher's chance of winning tonight.
She has to win the first set. If she doesn't win the first set, we're done.
I agree with that.
She, you know, you could see it the other night. The gas in the tank's pretty low. She's going to struggle if the match gets extended out. You know, the longer it goes, the less likely it is it's going to turn in her favor. So she needs to blast Kontaveit away relatively quickly. I think she can maybe get to two sets at 6-3, 6-4, or something like that. But if it gets extended out, the longer it's on the court, the better chance there is for her opponent to just run her down and finish her off when her movement starts to slow.
You know, that's a good point. I think, you know, it was interesting watching that match on Monday night. If you remember, Serena was down 2-3, about to be down 2-4, and she hit that backhand return miss hit winner off the back of the line. And from that moment forward, it was over. You know, she's going to have to start out probably pretty quickly. You know, she got off to a fast start Monday, 2-love, and then dropped the next three games. She can't afford to do that against a Kontaveit, and I think she knows that. The one thing I noticed, too, is, you know, her serve, Serena's serve got a lot better as the match progressed. She started moving more. I think she credited the fans for that. So we'll just have to wait and see. Big numbers. It's hard to see or believe, Craig, because we've been doing this together a long time. When was the last time at a major Serena was an underdog? I can't remember the last time.
Gotta
be a long time, right? Was she an underdog against Naomi Osaka the first time they played at the US Open Final?
No, I don't think so, because when you factor in that it was in New York and Osaka had never won anything at that point, I think people were like, yeah, Serena will just bully her. I would like to say that no, she probably wasn't.
No, we'll see. That's going to be a good one. Let's look at some of these matches today and for today and tomorrow. We were kind of looking at the first round, or the second round, I should say. Now, we've got some early WTA matches. Selby Rogers is taking on Kuzmova. That's unbettable unless you want the dog. Hannah Madlikova's daughter is a big underdog to Ons Jabeur this morning. What do you think about that match? Is there a chance for this kid? Because I think Hannah's done a hell of a good job with her daughter.
I would like to say yes, but given the opponent, I'm going to say no. I think Ons Jabeur is really, really good. I just think she lacks a little bit of that killer instinct to finish people off that I would like to see from someone of her ability. In the women's, though, there's always a chance, right? Let's not kid ourselves on. This is not the ATP Tour. The top players do not win. You know, when you watch a men's match, 90% of the time, you've got a good idea who's going to win based upon ranking. You know, those top 10, top 20 players are going to be there for the first 2-3 rounds for sure. They're going to get rid of all these lower seeds pretty comfortably. On the women's tour, as we've seen by the list of names you read out earlier, that's not always the case. So I'm not going to write it off and say it's impossible. But I like Jabeur. I think there's a lot more to come from her. She had a big opportunity at Wimbledon and she didn't cash in there. I think she's going to be one of those players that's going to be a favorite to be, you know, in the last four, last eight here. So it would be a surprise to me if Jabeur lost in round two.
Yeah, I'm not as high on Jabeur as you are. The talent is obviously there, but sometimes her mind disappears, and that's an issue. I think it's going to be very difficult to play this kid because Manlik has nothing to lose. You know, everything to gain from this. But we'll have to wait and see. Maria Sakkari is taking on Yu Wang. Now, Maria is a huge favorite. The spread is minus five games or plus 4.5 is your best bet for Wang. The total's 20.5 games. That's plus money, even money, I should say. What do you think? You know, Maria has not played very well at all this year. She's dealing with some big adjustments for her own life. You know, she's traveling with her prime minister, son, boyfriend, and she's reached the top five in the world. Wow, I'm blown away by that. But, you know, she's also cited that she's had to make some big adjustments. We talked about this before, Craig. These kids from smaller countries where they haven't had a whole lot of success, these kids are instant rock stars in those countries, and their lives change. And learning how to adjust and deal with that is a very good, is a very difficult thing, I should say. But does Wang have a chance? I mean, maybe this goes three sets because Maria has played more, just about as many sets as anyone. Her matches usually go the distance.
Yeah, I think it's a good matchup for Wang, actually. I could actually see this being a bit of a shock. I just don't, you know, Sakkari got to the semifinals here last year lost to
Raducanu.
Raducanu, yeah. I was trying to think if it was Raducanu or Fernandez. It's Raducanu.
I was mad for about 6 months, remember?
Yeah, you were.
I was disappointed for Maria because she didn't play well.
I think, you know, that was probably her chance last year. And I know she's in the top five, but as you said, she's not been playing well. She just looks susceptible to somebody coming and, you know, just knocking her out. That's the way I've seen it for the last few months. I just don't look at her as someone when I get given the sheet for the slam and you say to me, pick a winner. I don't gravitate towards her name at the minute. I've not seen anything from her that makes me think, yeah, this is looking good. And again, like I'm probably not going to touch this match, but I might play next round against Sakkari because I think there's going to be value in that play.
I agree. I think I'm going to leave this one alone because you just never know. Wang is a fighter. Maria has one of the biggest serves on tour. We'll have to wait and see. The one I'm interested in, and this goes off today about 12:15 p.m. Eastern, is Camille Giorgi versus Madison Keys. Now, Keys is a minus 215 favorite. Giorgi is a plus 190. Giorgi hasn't really played well at this event. You know, it's pretty tough when you're playing in the United States and you have to look over your shoulder because your father bilked all those investors. You know, there are people still angry about that. That was years ago. You can Google it. Pretty bad stuff. Does Keys blast her today in straight sets?
Yeah, I think so. I always like Madison Keys at this event. I'm surprised she's not won it yet. I mean, she's gotten close before. I think Madison Keys will be here second week. So, yeah, I think straight sets is probably a good play.
I think so, too. I don't know if you can play the money line, but I think you have to, right? Because the total's 20.5 games. You don't really know. Giorgi does fight a bit. But, again, she's had issues playing in the States for many reasons. But I think we're going to go with Madison Keys. That will be a play. You can track all these plays at BetStamp, by the way. The next one that, to me, is interesting is Ali Risk Armitage. She's added the Armitage now. I wonder why. And Camille Osorio. Risk is not a bad play at minus 175 today. But maybe it's too much.
No, you're right. It's not a terrible play.
It's not a terrible play. It's minus 175. I mean, most sports, I wouldn't touch that number. But tennis is a little different. I think she takes her out. I mean, there's not even a total in this one. There's not a spread. There's nothing. Just the money line, because the odds makers don't know what to do with this either. But I think risk takes care of business today.
That's a bold play. Bold play. Maybe it's one we should have a look at.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to wait and see. I'm not going to I'm not tagging that, but I think if you want to pick up a couple bucks, I don't think she's a parlay buster if that's your thing. I think she wins. Now, this Shuai Zhang or Shuai Wang, she's a 310 favorite. She's taking on Smilova, who's a plus 280 dog. I'm leaving that one alone, don't you think?
Yeah, I actually think the outcome of that one's pretty much spot on. I don't see the dog coming back into that one at all. Definitely one that I'm not keen on touching.
No, I'm not keen on this. Now, this one here could be interesting. You got Rebecca Pusher Marino against Darius Nigur. Now, Marino is a minus 152 favorite, and an over 20.5 is the total. The spread is 3.5 games. Is Marino the player to take a shot on? Because I'm not so sure I want to do that with her. She's played very well this year. But you know what? This is the U.S. Open, and Pusher's, you know, they have gotten far, Caroline Wozniacki being one of them. But does this kid have a chance of beating this girl today?
That's the kid that beat Halep.
Yeah, that's the kid that beat Halep.
The Ukrainian kid? Did you see her after she won? She went nuts.
Who would?
Yeah, well, you know, and then she broke down and all that sort of stuff. And everyone in the crowd was behind her, by the way, because she's 20 years old. She's never played a professional match before. She's from Ukraine.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Yeah,
in
yeah,
itself,
yeah.
You know, gets a crowd backing her, and rightly so.
What a story.
Yeah, and it's a tremendous story. I think, like, she played well against Halep. I would not go against her, because I think, like, you're going to be playing against the entire crowd. If Marino's going to win, they're going to hope that this one's on one of the smaller courts with, you know, people will have seen that on Monday on, I think it was Louis Armstrong, or maybe it was on Grandstand. They'll have seen that on the big court, and people will be coming down to have a look at this girl. You know, people who've probably got a grounds pass or whatever, and you get access to all these courts, they'll be coming down to have a look just to see, you know, a little bit of that story, see if it's going to continue. I think it's going to be a really difficult match for Marino, and there might be a bit of value here playing against Marino.
Maybe so. I will fade that. You know, one of the things that I try to fade would be the amazing upset and then play in the next night or two nights later. You know, she's probably giddy, and rightly so. What a story, though. You know, people ask me all the time, Craig, what happened to American tennis? Why are all these kids from these small countries coming out and banging? Well, I'll tell you what. You know, in America, well, at least not yet. That's coming soon, America. Trust me. Or this is coming soon. Trust me. That girl and her sister had to flee Ukraine in the middle of the night with just her racket bag just to escape the bombs and the death. They had to leave their parents behind. American kids don't have to worry about any of those things. You know, that's why these kids come in and succeed, because they have no choice, because they desperately want a better life. In America, you just get a handout. You know, you got Francis Tiafoe, for example. They put millions into him. What has he done in tennis? Christopher Eubanks, another one. Millions into him. Taylor Fritz, big money into him. They don't pan out because they don't have to. Because they're set for life. They live in a country where, basically, if something doesn't go right, you know, somebody will help them out. They don't have to worry about bombs bursting over their heads or fleeing in the middle of the night to save their life. They go home to their suburbia, kick back, and if they lose, they lose. You know, but I'm not touching this one. Harriet Dart, Dalma Golfi, Harriet Dart, dude. That's your girl, man. Talk about her.
Yeah, she's an interesting one. She's had quite a few injury problems. She's one of a clutch of British players who are sort of coming into their mid-20s now, and it's a little bit boom or bust for them. Those girls have sat between like 100 and 150 in the rankings for quite a long time. There's been a lot of potential, but kind of like you've just been going through the situation with the American players, where there's, if you lose, there's not a lot of repercussions for losing. No. That's kind of what British tennis has been like. The LTA will hand you some more cash, and you'll keep spending their cash until such points as they stop giving you wild cards to get into Wimbledon. Harriet is, I think she's 26 now, because she's the same age as the likes of Booter and a couple of the other ones from that sort of little grouping that came through at the same time. She's up to 88 in the world. And this is where it gets kind of interesting for me, because once you're in the top 100, you pretty much start qualifying for a lot of the tournaments. She's got to go and take her 88 ranking and push towards top 50. We've put a lot of money into her in the same way that you've put a lot of money into a number of players in the US system. And I think a lot of the feeling over here is we're not getting a lot back from the female players. I mean, Raducanu aside, which she obviously won here last year, and that was kind of out of the blue. There's been a lot of investment in British tennis, and it's not really been rewarded by performances. This second round appearance is her best run at the US Open thus far. She's never been beyond the third round of a slam. I think Wimbledon on a wild card a few years back, she got to round three. But she's got to step out on her own, and she's got to start delivering some results, because these wild cards are not going to keep coming. They're going to dry up eventually. We're going to stop investing in these people. So this is a huge probably run from now until the next Wimbledon for her. She's got to deliver on her ranking. And I was actually surprised that she did so well in the first round. I thought she had a pretty rough draw to come through that match. I thought it was pretty impressive. I thought she did well. She's got to back it up, though. You know, she needs to get to the third round, maybe even the second week. Give her something to build on, because at 26 years old, you know, there's a lot of players at 26 years old who have achieved a lot more and had a lot less investment in them. So this is going to be big for Harriet Dart. Whether she gets it or not, I'm not so sure. I've not seen enough of her game to think that she will do that. But, hey, you know, it's the US Open. Anything can happen.
You got that right. Now I'm looking at Dalfi and her career splits. And she's actually played poorly on the hard court. She's won like 28% of her matches. But what she has done, Craig, is done pretty well. She's been pretty hot coming in here, but the problem is she hasn't played on the hard courts. Now, for the ladies, that's not that big a deal. But she's won. Let me see. She didn't get to Wimbledon. Oh, yeah, she did get to Wimbledon. She's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. She's 6-2 since Wimbledon. But most of those results were on clay. I think Golfi has the game to beat her. I don't know how she's going to be. She being Dart in this situation. It's a good play either way, maybe. But I'm leaving it alone. I'm afraid of these two.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's difficult because Dart didn't just win. She beat Kasatkina. You know, that's a big win for
Dart. That was a huge win.
And, like, you know, Dart probably isn't the best hardcore player in the world either. But that's a massive win. And that should give her a lot of confidence going into this matchup. As you say, it's difficult to pick. You've only seen this one performance of Dart, and she didn't get to really fight for it because she got smoked in that second set. And I thought when Krasnikina won that second set 6-1, especially after Dark scraping the first one, the tiebreak, I kind of thought, the momentum's gone here. Krasnikina's just going to roll through. And then that didn't happen. So that was promising for Dark, that she didn't just get rolled over after losing that second set so badly. But this is going to be a good match. Maybe Dart's a play. I mean, the money's not going to be great on it. I don't think you're going to get Dart as a huge dog, but maybe it's worth a play.
Dart's a favorite, -112. Dolphy's +120.
Yeah, I was not, there's not a lot in that, is there?
There's no value there at all. If the only value is if you think Dart loses.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not going to touch it. No, not at that price.
It's too many gray areas. We can't touch the Coco Gauff match. He's -909. Maybe some degenerate will pay that juice. I don't know. Kudermetova, she's a huge favorite. Let's see. Caroline Garcia, she takes on Kalinskaya. Now, that could be interesting. The total's only 20.5 games, but it's -111, Craig. -109 on the under there. Also, this spread is sort of interesting. You've got Garcia, she's -4.5 games. And Kalinskaya is -4.5. Those are your best numbers. I like Caroline Garcia, don't get me wrong. But she's gone a lot farther than most thought. She won 3 tournaments this summer. She's won on grass. She won a tournament on grass, on clay, and she won on the hard courts. But she won in Cincinnati, and usually when you win in Cincinnati, you don't win. The only one who's done that since 2004 is Kim Clijsters. Man, I would take a run at this total, maybe 20.5 games. Maybe this goes 3 sets, Craig.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't like playing Garcia because whenever I play, I lose. It's kind of become a personal thing. It's one of those where I get stung on her a bit too often, but maybe that over there's something for people to look at.
Yeah, maybe. It's not something that I'm going to play, but if you really need to get some action in the middle of the afternoon, that's your play. Krejcikova's taking on Krunic. That's an unplayable number. This is interesting because Superbook has made a mistake here. Aya Tomljanovic is a +600 dog against Evgenia Rudina, who's also a +632 dog at Pinnacle. Craig, Tomljanovic is going to destroy this girl.
Are you jumping on that one?
You're damn right. Oh, yeah. 600? Tomljanovic? Now, everywhere else. Craig, everywhere else, she's like -899, -900. This is the same situation that we had with Sakkari, remember? And she lost.
Yeah.
I'm taking a stab at it anyway. I'm going to take that number, +600. It'll make my Betstamp account look good, right? Because I don't see how she loses.
No, I agree. I think unless there's some sort of injury difficulty we don't know about, you're absolutely right.
I think it's going to be a fantastic day. Now, here's another one. This one here, I wish was on center court, but Serena will be there. Ludmila Samsonova versus Leyla Fernandez. Fernandez is a +150 dog here to probably one of the hottest players on tour, Samsonova, who won Cleveland, I believe. Any interest in Leyla Fernandez?
No.
I think she still might win, but I love watching her play. I love the energy she brings. I love the confidence to the court she brings. When you interview her before her matches, what's the first thing she says? I'm going to make her feel my game. And she runs down everything, man.
Yeah, I just think, she's ranked about 14, 15 in the world, and it's another Raducanu situation. Sure, she's done better than Raducanu in the last year. She's coped better with the instant success she had here at the US Open when she got to the final. But I think, again, though, she's never really kicked on. Like, she got those points in the bag from the US Open. I felt like she was going to be top 10 player, maybe top 5-6, but she's not delivered since the US Open. I think her form's just so hit and miss. And that's not a good matchup against that opponent. I think that's a really tough match for her.
I think so too. You know, she's been injured. To her, in her defense, you know, you saw her during Wimbledon. She was doing exercises in a walking boot. I think, you know, she got a lot of points she has to defend here. I think it's a little bit unfair that she, you know, she did get hurt and she's had some niggles, but she's been better than the others. But this Samsonova is hitting the ball Mach 10, not Mach 5, Mach 10. And she just didn't miss in Cleveland. She's played good. I think she'd take a shot on her on the money line, Craig.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Minus 145 is a very good price for that. And if Layla wins, I wouldn't be surprised. I'll be happy. But so much for that. Now, here's another match right here. The last one of the night. Bianca Andreescu is taking on Beatriz Haddad-Maia. Maia is a minus 115 favorite. Andreescu is a plus 120 dog, Craig.
And Andreescu's won this before, right?
She sure has, but she's another one with many injury issues.
Yeah, no, you're right, you're right. We can't discount that.
And this Beatriz Haddad-Maia is playing Mach 5. I have her in my covers article for an obvious reason. She's been hot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's sensible. But I like the Sandrescu when she plays. You know, when she's fit and she's playing, I do like her. I always look at her a bit like Ostapenko, but more reliable. Just if she's not fit, obviously she breaks down and that's not great from our perspective, but I do like her. I really do like her.
You like Andreescu here?
Yeah, I do. I actually think, like, if she could stay fit, she's one of those players that can be almost unstoppable. But is she going to stay fit? I don't know.
That's a tough one. All right, let's move over to the Wednesday men's matches, and then we'll come back and give them a couple for Thursday. How's that sound?
Sure.
Sure. I'm in the chair now, Craig. I might as well get it done, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, go for it.
It's not a lot of fun in this chair, by the way. Okay, so Alex De Minaur is taking on Christian Garin today. Garin is a big dog, plus 550. De Minaur is a minus 670 favorite, Craig. Any interest? None, huh?
Not at those numbers.
Now, this is the one I wanted to bring up today and talk about with you, Craig. Pedro Chachin is taking on Tracy Austin's son, Brandon Holt. I'm sorry, Tracy and Scott Holt's son. Sorry, Scott. Go ahead, dude. Because you know I'm going to catch hell, right?
You are? Are you going to play the dog or are you going the other way?
I'm playing the dog.
This kid has
nothing. This kid has nothing to lose, first of all. He's 24. Okay, his mother was the youngest to win the U.S. Open at 16, right? But here's the deal. That kid is a bulldog. He's experienced playing on hard courts. He just took out Fritz. That's not a big thing because, you know, Tracy Austin took out Taylor Fritz's mama in their only meeting. I never was surprised by that. The kid qualified. And Chachin, what is Chachin, bro? Chachin is a clay court player. I don't think Brandon Holt is going to be surprised by this occasion. Tracy's done a great job with him. She's helping him out. You see her on the court with her son. She's very happy. She's not doing any commentary. She's not speaking. But I think he's got a good chance to win today.
Then that could be our player of the day.
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, opponent's not a hard court player. If the opponent was a hard court player, I would be backing right off of this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but yeah, like you look at the opponent and you wonder, did he get through the first round because he was also up against a clay quarter or just had a good matchup? Yeah, I think in terms of trying to pick a good match for a dog to win, this is definitely right up there.
I think so, too. Now you got Zandikulp versus Corentin Moutet. Moutet's a plus 190 dog. These are morning matches, by the way. Zandikulp is a minus 215 favorite. I'm probably going to pass on this because Botic is one of those inconsistent players. I think he's got a leg injury, though. Moutet is hit or miss, right?
Yeah, he's very hit or miss. I've been stung a couple of times this year on him.
Stay away from this. Let the degenerates have that one, Craig. Alexander Bublik versus Pablo Carreño Busta. Busta's a 312 favorite. Bublik is a plus 286 dog. The total's high for this match, 36.5. The odds makers are probably expecting Bublik to drag him in a couple tiebreakers, and that's probably what might happen. But I'm leaving this one alone also.
Yeah, not a great match to play on. You look at it, Carreño Busta's more of a clay court player, so he's probably not going to blast Bublik out particularly quickly. That's probably what the odds makers are looking at. It's again, like for me, I'm not comfortable on the play on this one because Bublik could actually win this.
Well, I know, just depending on which one shows up, right?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You know, you're never too sure with Bublik if it's going to be the guy who just, you know, loses in straight sets. So if it's going to be the other Bublik that shows up, that is a tough play, really tough play. I might think about playing Bublik. I may have a look at this one again just before it goes off and see what the money is just before we go off, and there might be a play on this one.
I think so, too. Now you got Nava taking on Murray. Murray is way too big a dog. 455 favorite, plus 442 for Nava. No shot for Nava or a big shot for Nava?
Again, like which Andy Murray is coming to play.
He looked really gassed, didn't he?
He was complaining about the heat the other day.
It's going to be like that today, too.
Yeah, it will be. I think with Murray, you know, I quite like betting Murray matches at the minute in play after I've seen the first set, because I could usually tell whether, you know, if he's not won the first set, he's looking gassed, he's gone home. If he does win the first set, then he's winning the match, and I'll just leave it alone.
I think you're right. But Berrettini and Grenier, can't touch that. Juice is way too high. Let me see. Okay, Casper Ruud versus Tim Van Riethoven. Everybody loves to bet on Tim Van Riethoven. He's a plus 562 dog. Ruud is not technically... Well, he plays like his dad, Christian. And the bottom line is Christian was more known to play on what? Clay. So, but this Riethoven, that's an interesting price here. He did win his first round match. He did win on fast stuff, grass. But it was at his home club. You leave this one alone. There's too many landmines.
Yeah, I think Ruud actually might win this one. But I'm kind of waiting to pick him up in maybe the next round when he gets a good slap in, because I think he's still like third or fourth seed or something for this tournament. Just, you know, he's played really well on the clay this season. Hand it out to him. He's been the best clay court player on the men's side outside in the Dow. So we have to look at that. And that factors into some of the pricing here. So at some point we're going to get a price on Ruud and a price on his opponent, where the opponent's better place to take him out. And I think that might be next round. It might be the fourth round. But I don't see Ruud going in to the quarterfinals or, you know, semifinals here. That would be a huge surprise to me if he did.
Yeah, me too. Benjamin Banzai is taking on Nick Kyrgios in the heat. at 1:30 p.m. today. Obviously, Nick is an overwhelming favorite. Banzai can be tricky at plus 645, though. You know, with Nick, you never know.
Yeah, Nick's a bit random, isn't he? He's another one that could come out and it might just not be suiting him, especially if his serve's not going. But I think Nick's playing as good as he's played ever. I think his attitude's been a lot better recently as well. You know, he's wanting to play at the minute. He doesn't feel like he's being forced to play by anyone. That's working out pretty well for him. I said, you know, a few weeks ago on the show that Nick's in a place now where the next 18 months for him are critical, because there's going to be a break in the men's tour where Djokovic isn't going to be there, or he's going to be, you know, on a downwards trend. Nadal is going to start going on a downwards trend, or he's going to be gone. The opportunities are going to be there for Nick to win something, but he's got to get there before the likes of Carlos Alcaraz, Jannik Sinner, and these guys come to the forefront, because these guys are going to get there, right? You know, you and I know that these guys are coming. We've seen a lot of this Sinner. We've seen, you know, a lot of talk about Alcaraz already. These guys are going to be top players. But there's going to be a window of opportunity for Nick to possibly win a Grand Slam, whether it's at Wimbledon where he can serve on that grass surface, or whether it's back in Australia. So it's down to Nick and Nick's mentality, because I think the game's there. If he wants it, is it going to be here though? Yeah, I think it's more likely to be Australia than here. But yeah, I think Nick probably wins this one, but he's probably not going to win the tournament.
Yeah, I'm leaving it alone. The one that I'm really interested today is Sebastian Korda. He's a slight favorite. Tommy Paul's a slight dog. Tommy Paul's played very well, and he's played very well on hard courts for quite a while now. And that's a small price to pay, plus 108, against Korda, who suffered from shin splints. I don't think his movement is there just yet. I think Tommy Paul's a fighter, and he's one of these American kids who just goes unnoticed because, you know, the USDA didn't spend as much money on him as they did on others. I think Tommy Paul has a very good shot of winning this tennis match today.
Oh, you were telling me the other week that you think Tommy Paul's got a pretty good chance of winning his tournament.
I do, actually. But that was before I saw the draw. This is a tricky one here. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I like Tommy. I think, you know, as you said, Korda's going through a period of struggles, and everyone goes through that at times in their career. It's probably well placed for Tommy to step up. It's a good matchup for him. He's not playing against a super tough opponent, not at the moment anyway. I think it's a good play at a fairly good price.
Yeah, anything plus money is always good. You know, laying 3,000 to one, that's a degenerate move. Only degenerates bet like that, especially in tennis, because anything can happen. Only a degenerate bets like that. Here's one, though, that's interesting. People are talking about this on Twitter. Jordan Thompson, he's plus 116. Daniel Gallen is a minus 130 favorite, and that's probably a good price for Gallen today.
It is. Yeah, it's a really good price. I think we should probably add that to our card.
And I think we're going to. Now, this other match here is Yibing Wu, who's won like 18 straight matches through various stages of the season, meaning he's played ITF tournaments. He's played challengers. He's played satellites. He's now winning main draw events and qualifying. And he takes on Nuno Borghe, who's also a plus 249. This is a mistake, kids. Here's another mistake. If you're betting at the Superbook, go get it now, because Wu is an overwhelming favorite everywhere else.
Yeah, there's something to be said for winning matches. So I know, like you said, like, oh, he's played ITFs or whatever, but...
wins are wins, baby.
Wins are wins. Wins build confidence. And I think you've just found another one.
I like to do that, you know. I'm known to do that sometimes. You should see, if you think these are cheeky conversations, You should see our text. Okay, so let me see. Where was the last one I wanted to look at before we jump over to Thursday? We're already an hour into this thing, Craig.
Oh, I'm well aware. I'm watching the clock, the shot clock.
The shot clock. Oh, God. You know what? We're going to get into that in a minute, but here we go. Here's another one that, to me, is very interesting. It's FAA Felix Auger-Aliassime is a -255 favorite. He's taking on your man, Jack Draper, who's a +230 dog.
Whoa, you know who I'm playing here, right?
I don't know, no. You're probably fading it, right?
Well, I'm not playing Felix because I just get burned every time I play this guy. He's the new guy on Monfils. He looks the part. He, you know, when you see him playing those shots and stuff, you think this guy can beat anyone. But he doesn't because he doesn't have it. He's not a killer. This guy Draper's impressed me. You know, this guy was outside the top 100 not so long ago. He came on the scene at Wimbledon. Not a lot of people were talking about him. Even in the events prior to Wimbledon, there wasn't a lot of conversation about this guy. He's come on the scene, and he has just shoved his ranking from like around 100 up to around about 50 in the world. This guy's on an upwards trend. I don't know how far he goes with it, but I like the bits and pieces of his game. He's learning all the time. He's not one of those kids who's got a coaching setup where they don't want to listen to advice from people who've been there and done it. You know, they're taking on board the advice from the people around him and the pros that are trying to steer him in the right direction. This guy's going to be here for the long stay. I don't know where he peaks out at, maybe top 20, but hey, I didn't think Cameron Norrie would get into the top 10. So this guy Draper, I think he's real young. He's early in his career, but I think he could spring a surprise here.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm not going to check it because I'm not sure. Now, this is not being played up enough, Craig. Thursday night, Victoria Azarenka. Where is she from again? Belarus. She's taking on Marta Kostyuk from the Ukraine. Thursday morning.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, let me set this up for those of you who only pay attention to degenerates who talk about numbers and tell you that Nick Kyrgios doesn't have a drop shot or doesn't have the game to beat Daniil Medvedev when he's already done so. You know, little things like that. Anyway, here we go. I'm going to tell you right now how this is going to go. This is going to get ugly, and someone's going to withdraw, probably Kostyuk. Victoria Azarenka, from the moment the bombings in Ukraine started, she was probably the first one to speak against it, the very first one. She's a mama. She don't want no war. She wanted to participate in an exhibition they held at the U.S. Open to benefit the Ukraine. She wanted to be there to help raise money for those folks. And she was not allowed to do so because, you know, Elina Svitolina, who isn't even playing now, and others didn't like that. So she got banned, just like she got banned from Wimbledon. And I can bet you dollars to donuts if this plays out, Azarenka is going to go out there and slap this girl.
Yeah, that'll be the plan. I mean, she's good enough to do that. We've seen her do that down the years. She's not been the same player since she came back from having her child. But there have been moments where she's rolled back the years, and I think this one is going to be carrying quite a lot of weight on it, as you said. And I do think that she could get a little bit tasty at times. And it won't be Azarenka that's instigating that, but I do think there will be moments during this one where it gets very interesting.
Better have a lot of security for Azarenka. She's going to need it. The other match on Thursday that's interesting to me, well, actually, maybe there's a couple. Maria Buzkova, someone I like a lot in this event. She's a -130. She's taking on Karolina Pliskova, who's a dog in this one. Pliskova's a dog in this one, Craig. She's got one of the biggest serves on tour. She's a dog. How is Pliskova a dog to Buzkova?
I think it's just a matter that Pliskova's on a real downwards curve now. She's one of those players who hovered around the top 10 for quite a long time. There was a lot of talk of her winning slams, But it's not happened, and she's starting to regress. And I think, yeah, she just doesn't have that consistency anymore. She doesn't look like – I mean, you and I have had a lot of problems back in Pliskova over the years. Every time we thought we were a shoo-in for her to win, she would just fall on her backside. Cost us quite a bit of money, but she's gone backwards for me. And I just think like playing against her now is probably the smart play.
Playing against her? I think so too. Let me see. Sloan's playing against who's Sloan playing against?
Świątek.
Oh boy.
Is she Sloan beating her? That would be a big win.
That would be huge. If she does, she's never going to leave. That'll be on center court for sure. And she's never going to leave center court. She'll be still twirling and smiling and counting her money mostly. That's really it for Thursday for the girls. Let me slide down. You know, the funny thing is Świątek hasn't played well lately since she went on that big winning streak. I don't know, man. We'll have to wait and see on Thursday what that number is. All right, let me see here. I'm trying to scroll down to the men's because, you know, there's college football now and everything going on.
Shall I just lead you off with the big one while you search for it?
Yeah, you do that.
Nadal's playing against Fognini.
Oh, by the way.
And, you know, Fognini's beaten Nadal here before. I think he beat him in 2015 when we were there. When we were last there, Nadal beat Fognini in 5 sets on Ash in the evening session. And this is going to be the evening session. It's Nadal. It's going to be on Ash. Nadal is playing against Fognini.
He's playing at 11 a.m. in the morning.
Fognini, by the way, played 5 sets in his first match. That one went to the wire. He won 6-4 coming from 2 sets down. Nadal lost the first set of his match, and then when he lost the first set, they were talking about this Hijikata kid as if he was gonna knock him off, and then after that he got blown away. So Nadal looks like he's playing okay. Fognini, he can be a problem for anyone, including himself.
Mostly for himself. I can't bet on Fognini. He's a guy who he's out there trying. But, you know, he's a realist. He's always been. If things ain't going his way, hey, you know what? Flavia is waiting for him. But I bet you she told him straight up, you know what? I've won a major. What's your contribution to this family?
She won this one in 2015.
She sure did, didn't she? She sure did. And who called that? Craig Doyle did. Do you remember when we were sitting in that bar? That Greek bar? That was so much fun, Craig. I still have pictures of that.
Well, I know you do. I know you do. There's actually, you know, not all these Thursday matches are confirmed yet. There's still a little bit of an overhang from last night where we haven't finished a few matches. But there's certainly some interesting ties coming up on Thursday. I know you're looking for the numbers to go with them at the minute. But
I have one more to talk about, and then we'll hang up the phone, hang up the thing. We'll let these nice people go on about their day. Brandon Nakashima is a +123 dog against Grigor Dimitrov, -139. That's a hell of a good price for Dimitrov. Nakashima has not played very consistently lately. I'm a little concerned about his serve. Dimitrov is a guy, he still shows up. He doesn't tank. He just either has it or he doesn't. And this looks like a pretty good situation for him to have it.
He got a great first round draw against Steve Johnson, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did.
He just steamrolled Johnson completely.
He's hanging around with Serena, you know. You know what I love most is the relationships you build because of tennis. Some of the more unusual ones. You know what I mean? You know, Dimitrov was dating one of Serena's biggest rivals, and yet they're pals. It just works out that way. You know, it doesn't always work out, but some of these relationships we build in tennis are special, like the one I have with my friend here, Craig Doyle. Good stuff today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm sure we'll be back next week as we get down to the business end of the tournament, and we've got to make some much tougher picks next week.
We sure do, and next week I'll have another tennis writing announcement to share. Pretty big news, huh, Craig?
Oh, I'm excited to hear about the official unveiling of that. I've heard a little preview of it, but I'm looking forward to hearing the full details next week on the show.
And you will. And you will. All right, y'all. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of This Week in Tennis. For Craig Doyle, I'm Phil Nations. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
This Week in Tennis.